Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhaktivedanta ki, Rantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Kiridas Maharaj ki, Jainita Gopurimana. Okay. So tonight we'll discuss chapter 11, the entire chapter, verses 11-48. And at the end of the class I'll hand out the open book exam topics for the next section. So just remind me to hand them out.
Okay. So what is chapter 11 called?
Chapter 11 is called King Indra Annihilates the Demons. Okay. So the battle continues. Shukadev Goswami said, "Thereafter, by the supreme grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Hari, all the demigods headed by Indra and Vayu were brought back to life. Being alive, and the demigods began severely beating the very same demons who had defeated them before. When the most powerful Indra became angry and took his thunderbolt in hand to kill Maharaj Bali, the demons began lamenting, 'Alas! Alas!' Sober and tolerant and well equipped with paraphernalia fighting, Bali Maharaj moved before Indra on the great battlefield. King Indra, who always carries the thunderbolt in his hand, rebuked Bali Maharaj as follows. Indra said, 'O rascal, as a cheetah sometimes binds the eyes of a child and takes away his possessions, you are trying to defeat us by displaying some mystic power, although you know that we are the masters of all such mystic powers. Those fools and rascals who want to ascend to the upper planetary system by mystic power or mechanical means, or who endeavor to cross even the upper planets and achieve the spiritual world of liberation, I cause to be sent to the lowest region of the universe.'"
Yeah, undoubtedly different planetary system for different person. I take it in Bhagavad Gita 14.8. Uttam Gacchanti Sattarasana. Listen to the moral goodness and go to the upper planets. Those in the most of darkness and passion are not allowed to enter the higher planets. The word Divam. So it's the higher planetary system known as Swarkaloka. Indra, kingdom of the higher planetary system, has the power to push down any conditioned soul attempting to go from the lower to the higher planets without proper qualifications. Whatever attempt to go to the moon is also an attempt by the inferior man to go to Swarkaloka by artificial mechanical means. This attempt cannot be successful. From this statement of Indra, it appears that anyone attempting to go to the higher planetary system by mechanical means, which are they are called Maya, is condemned to go to hellish planets, the lowest portion of the universe. To go to the higher planetary system, one needs sufficient good quality. A simple person situated in the world of ignorance and addicted to drinking, hate eating, and illicit sex will never enter the higher planets by mechanical means.
So what are the points here?
With his mystic power, struggling to test his powers to send people through the heavenly planets and heavenly days, they were pushed down again. So I think Ravana was trying to build up a stairs all the way to heaven or something like that. Trying to get unqualified people to places where they're not supposed to be belonging. So they were pushed down.
Anything else?
He's emphasizing more on the moon, on still not be able to reach with the material senses. Not be able to reach moon again. Again, again, he's emphasizing again.
Any other points?
I have a question. So, in our planetary system, no one is able to reach the
It means primarily they're in the mode of goodness, primarily. But the modes of material nature are acting everywhere. So it means the mode of passion is there because they're demigods. So the demigods are very passionate by nature, and sometimes they become angry. So it means that's the mode of ignorance. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that the modes are always competing for supremacy. So each mode of nature is always trying to overcome the other one. So primarily the demigods are in the mode of goodness, but also the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance is there, and it affects them. The dynamic duo. Thank you for coming. Any other points? Okay. So, how do we travel from one lifetime to another lifetime? It is through the modes of material nature that we cultivate in this lifetime. So if you live in the mode of goodness, then when you die, you'll be primarily in the mode of goodness. If you live in the mode of passion, then when you die, you'll be mostly passionate. And if you're in the mode of ignorance, then you'll die in that mode. So then that will lead you to your next body, your next life. So according to the way we are living in this life, that will take us to our next life. So therefore we have to cultivate the right kind of disposition or the right kind of qualities. Because if you cultivate too much the mode of passion, then you'll be born in the passionate place, which means generally means in the earthly region. It's very passionate in the earthly region. If you're more in the mode of goodness, then you will go to upper planetary systems. If you're more in the mode of darkness, you go to lower species or to lower planetary systems. So what we have become in this lifetime, that is because of what we cultivated in the last lifetime. If we're too much in the mode of passion, then in this lifetime we'll also be born passionate. If we're too much in the mode of ignorance, in this lifetime we'll begin in ignorance.
And if animally. We're in
the, what's that?
Animally.
No, I'm saying that in this lifetime. That if in our previous life we've been too passionate or too ignorant, then in this life we'll be like that. You see, some people are just very tamasic. Some people are very passionate, rajasic. Right? And some people are sattvic, which means they're in the mode of goodness. So the modes are there according to what we've cultivated previously. And what we cultivate now will lead to our next life. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, we should make this the last life in the material world. We should go back home, back to Godhead. Now how do we go back to Godhead? First of all, we have to practice devotional service in the mode of goodness. Prabhupada explains that in the introduction to the Nectar of Instruction, the Upadeshamrita. He says that when you cultivate devotional service in the mode of goodness, that will lead to pure goodness. So we have to break down or dismantle our tendency to be in the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion and cultivate the mode of goodness. And then gradually from the mode of goodness we need to go to Shuddha Sattva, which means pure goodness. In pure goodness you can enter into the spiritual world. So we have to cultivate devotional service.
from the platform of the mode of goodness, that will lead us to gradually entering into the mode of pure goodness. Because if we don't cultivate devotional service properly in this life, we'll just take birth again. So devotional service needs to be cultivated properly. That's the point. It's not automatic. It doesn't mean just because we're doing some devotional service, that will automatically take us to the supreme destination. It's how we perform our devotional service. It's the qualities that we cultivate in this lifetime. We have to cultivate devotional qualities. As we read last week, Krishna says in the 16th chapter of the Gita, the divine qualities. So we need to cultivate those divine qualities. We need to cultivate the 26 qualities of the devotee. So that we will go towards pure goodness and we'll develop the kind of qualities which will enable us to be accepted by Krishna in the spiritual world. But if you don't cultivate the right mentality, if you don't cultivate the right qualities, if you don't have the right attitude in devotional service, then you can't go to a higher destination. You'll just be born again in this world, and that's not our goal. Any points? Yeah, the point is that devotional service itself is not tainted by the modes of nature. It is pure because we're doing it for Krishna. But while we're doing it, what mode are we in? So sometimes we have to get passionate to perform an activity to get the job done. But we shouldn't stay in that mode or be controlled by that mode. In other words, it's just like you need a pen to write or you need a hammer to nail the nails, so then you use the instrument to perform the activity. But as soon as you're finished, you put the instrument down. Right? So the mode of passion, we use it to serve Krishna, but as soon as it's finished, then we just let go of it. We don't remain in the mode of passion. So you have to cultivate devotional service in the mode of goodness. That will lead to pure goodness. Because mode of goodness is not the goal either. Is that clear? Mm-hmm. Any other points?
So it's challenging to see how the transition between these modes. Like we go to work, for example, we carry on with the more passion obviously to get the work done. And when we are off the office, it's the transition of how do we practice that?
It's very difficult. Very difficult in the modern age to practice a devotional or sattvic life, because it's like we're living two dual existences. You know, we go to the work with the non-devotees, we act in a way, we work hours which are unnatural. The whole thing is an unnatural situation. Then we come back and we're supposed to be in the mode of goodness and purifying our consciousness. It's very difficult in this day and age to find the balance. So somehow or other, we just have to find that balance. As much as we can. Try to do as little work as you can and get away with it. In other words, be in the office, but you know, read Prabhupada's books as much as you can. And try to exploit your company as much as you can, because they're trying to exploit you, right? That's what they're doing. They don't really care about you. You're just a means to their end. So, as much as possible, work as little as possible, do as much devotional service, hearing and chanting, and get paid for it. As much as you can. Get rich quickly, make a lot of money, and then retire. Retire by the time you're 40 and then just do full-time service. That's the best. If you can. It's not easy in Kali Yuga, the whole thing. Any other points?
Okay. So
if we don't go into more of Sudha Sattva in this life,
yeah,
can we still go to the spiritual
world? Yeah, Prabhupada said if you're 70% pure, then you can go. Today with my thunderbolt, which has hundreds of sharp edges, I, the same powerful person, shall sever your head from your body. Although you can produce so much jugglery through illusion, you are endowed with a poor fund of knowledge. Now try to exist on this battlefield with your relatives and friends. Bali Maharaj replied, all those present on this battlefield are certainly under the influence of eternal time. And according to their prescribed activities, they are destined to receive fame, victory, defeat, and death, one after another. Jogeshwar,
if one is victorious on the battlefield, he becomes famous. And if one is not victorious, but is defeated, he may die. Both victory and defeat are possible. Whether on such a battlefield as this, or on the battlefield of the struggle for existence. Everything takes place according to the laws of nature. Since everyone without exception is subject to the modes of mental nature, whether one is victorious or defeated, he is not independent, but is under the control of material nature. Bali Maharaj therefore was very sensible. He knew that the fighting was arranged by eternal time and that under the time's influence one must accept the results of one's own activities. Therefore, even though Indra threatened that he would now kill Bali Maharaj by releasing the thunderbolt, Bali Maharaj was not at all afraid. This is the spirit of a Kshatriya. Yudhe Chapi Apala Yanam, Abhata 18.43. A Kshatriya must be tolerant in all circumstances, especially on the battlefield. Thus, Bali Maharaj asserted that he was not at all afraid of death, although he was threatened by such a great personality as the King of Heaven.
Any points?
This material world, we shouldn't be threatened by circumstances.
Anything else?
In the Guru and Krishna, otherwise anywhere you go in the material world, you would be under the some mode of influence of the material nature. That is the only way to at least come out of it. Realize that there's something and how we can succumb.
Any other points?
Bali Maharaj is saying that the material nature is very strong and it gives us the result according to our past karma. So we can get defeated, we can become victorious. It's not up to us, it's up to the nature.
Any other points?
We are the dual, but actually the material nature is making us go into so many situations. We may have to just basically act according to the best of our ability, but the laws of nature will have more influence on us.
I think there is a verse in the Vedanta that the karma niya padikara is not political. That's what I think Bali Maharaj is saying.
In Brahma Samhita there is a verse called Indra Gopa Matale Indra Mahospa Karma Bandhana Rupa Palava. So right from the insect called Indra Gopa to Lord Indra, everyone is bound by their karma and they are actually make it on in this material world to bring that aspect of the karma.
Where
is that? Brahma Samhita. Can't remember the verse number, but it starts with Indra. Indra Gopa Matavendram. Indra Gopa is there inside the
Any other points?
We are not independent. We are under the influence, the most of material nature. When we take shelter of the spiritual energy, we can come out of it. We can situate ourselves properly.
That's good. So,
we must accept the results of our activities. Because our destiny is more powerful than us. And we will all be forced to face the destiny which we've been given according to our previous activities. So a devotee is fearless. That's why Prabhupada's name was Abhay Charana, Charanaravinda, which means one who is fearless at Krishna's feet. So that's the way a devotee has to become. He just faces whatever the material energy gives to him according to his previous activities and accepts that. That this is my karma, this is my destiny, this is the will of Krishna, and I have to accept it. And he just accepts it, and he's happy serving Krishna. Because he understands that that is his eternal constitutional position. He's Krishna's eternal servant. And then whatever happens to him externally, then he just accepts. That is Krishna's desire or arrangement. So you see, Bali Maharaj just accepts the circumstances. Just like at the end of Canto 6, we saw Vritrasura. He was exactly the same. He was attacked by Indra, but he just accepted, this is my destiny. I'm going to be killed now. And he did not resist it, but he just accepted it. Same as the sage Dadichi, who was mentioned at the end of the 6th Canto. The demigods were told, make a thunderbolt out of the bones of his body, and he gladly gave his body to the demigods. So that is the consciousness that we need to develop. That we will just give our body in Krishna's service. And when it's time to go, then we will not resist. But we will be happy and satisfied because we're serving Krishna. Any points?
Even if we resist, we can't do anything. Whatever Krishna desires, that will happen.
So it's best to be fearless. Okay. Which is easy to say, but see if we can do that. Any other points? Seeing the movements of time, those who are cognizant of the real truth neither rejoice nor lament for different circumstances. Therefore, because you are jubilant due to your victory, you should be considered not very learned.
Bali Maharaj knew that Indra, king of heaven, was extremely powerful, certainly more powerful than he himself. Nonetheless, Bali Maharaj challenged Indra by saying that Indra was not a very learned person. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna rebuked Arjuna by saying, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for living, for the living nor for the dead. Thus, as Krishna challenged Arjuna by saying that he was not a pandita or a learned person, Bali Maharaj also challenged King Indra and his associates. In this material world, everything happens under the influence of time. Consequently, for a learned person who sees how things are taking place, there is no question of being sorry or happy because of the waves of the material nature. After all, since we are being carried away by these waves, what is the meaning of being jubilant or morose? One who is fully conversant with the laws of nature is never jubilant or morose because of the nature's activities. In Bhagavad Gita 2.14, Krishna advises that one be tolerant. Following this advice of Krishna, one should not be morose or unhappy because of circumstantial changes. This is the symptom of a devotee. A devotee carries out his duty in Krishna consciousness and is never unhappy in awkward circumstances. He has full faith that in such circumstances Krishna protects his devotee. Therefore, a devotee never deviates from his prescribed duty of devotional service. The material qualities of jubilation and morosness are present even in the demigods, who are very highly situated in the upper planetary system. Therefore, when one is undisturbed by the so-called favorable or unfavorable circumstances of this material world, he should be understood to be Brahma-bhuta, or self-realized. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Brahma-bhuta-prasannatma nam-savashati-nam-savashati. One who is transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. When one is undisturbed by material circumstances, he should be understood to be in the transcendental stage, above the reactions of three modes of material nature.
What are the points then?
Nam bhuta prasannatma nam savashati nam-savashati. If we are transcendentally situated, then we won't be thinking of the result. Whatever comes, we'll accept it.
Any other points?
The devotee is thinking points.
Looks like the Bali Maharaj was already in the transcendental state because he knew the Indra had the nectar. But still, he was not, he was so fearful. Even after knowing that he had the nectar from God, and he was not going to die.
Any other points?
Bali Maharaj, although he is disciplined devotees,
so, Bali Maharaj is on the platform of Brahma-bhuta. Brahma-bhuta means he understands that he is spiritual by nature. Na sochiti, na kangshati. In the material world, everyone is lamenting and hankering. We all want something, and if we don't get what we want, then we lament. So that is the whole material existence. Everyone is desiring something, and if they do not get it, they lament. So a devotee, because he's on the Brahma-bhuta platform, then he is prasannatma. Prasannatma means joyful, means blissful in Krishna's service. So you see Srila Prabhupada, he was blissful in Krishna's service. Why? Because he was fully absorbed in that service. So a devotee becomes Brahma-bhuta, or fully self-realized, or realizes his spiritual nature. Why? Because he's fixed in devotional service. There's no deviation. Ahoituki apratihata. Apratihata means no interruption. Always absorbed in Krishna's service. Never thinking about anything else, never doing anything else, never speaking about anything else, but just always absorbed in Krishna's service. So when one is fully absorbed like that, he becomes self-realized again, spiritually conscious. And therefore, as Prabhupada points out in the purport, he does not become morose because of material circumstances. A devotee does not think, oh, now I'm about to die, or now I am sick, or now I have lost all my money, or now I've lost my family members. But he's just completely absorbed in Krishna's service. Many famous examples of that in Chaitanya's Leela, in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. We see even one time, there's several occasions, but on one time, during the kirtan, Srivas Thakur, his son, passed away. So then, they did not tell Lord Chaitanya that Srivas Thakur's son had passed away because they did not want to disturb Lord Chaitanya's ecstasy in his dancing. But then, when the kirtan was finished, Lord Chaitanya said that something happened in the house. And Srivas said, actually, my son passed away. During the kirtan, when the kirtan was going on, all the women who were in the other room
in the other part of the house, the son had passed away, they began to cry. Srivast Thakur went in, he said, "What is wrong?" And they said, "The son has passed." He said, "Okay, we will deal with it. Do not disturb Lord Chaitanya." Such an elevated state of consciousness. So then afterwards, Lord Chaitanya said, "Has something happened in the house?" And then they said, "Yes, actually, Srivast said, my son passed away." Lord Chaitanya said, "Why did you not tell me?" So he went into the room, he put his hand on the chest of Srivast's son, and he said, "Chant the holy names." And then the boy came back to life and began to chant. So that is the potency of Lord Chaitanya. And that is the spiritual platform. That even when something very difficult takes place, the devotee does not become affected by it. Because he is ahoituki apratihata, he is uninterrupted in his devotional service. These are extremely advanced levels of Krishna consciousness. So we should at least try to aspire to become like this. So, any points?
Bali Maharaj seems to be very equipoised. He's not very happy. He's actually giving instructions to Indra not to be too jubilant, even sort of like because you're sort of becoming victorious. In one sense, he's giving him instructions how to behave like a devotee.
In the moment of time, this may happen sometimes, but that influence of happiness and distress.
Any other points? Okay. You demigods think that your own selves are the cause of your attaining fame and victory. Because of your ignorance, saintly persons feel sorry for you. Therefore, although your words afflict the heart, we do not accept them. Sukadev Goswami said, after thus rebuking Indra, King of Heaven, with sharp words, Bali Maharaj, who could subdue any other hero, drew back to his ear. The arrow is known as Narikas. And attacked Indra with these arrows. Then he again chastised Indra with strong words. Since Maharaj Bali's rebukes were truthful, King Indra did not at all become sorry. Just as an elephant just as an elephant beaten by its driver's rod does not become agitated. When Indra, the defeater of enemies, released his infallible thunderbolt scepter at Bali Maharaj with the desire to kill him, Bali Maharaj indeed fell to the ground with his aeroplane, like a mountain with its wings cut off.
In many descriptions in Vedic literature, it is found that mountains also fly in the sky with wings. When such mountains are dead, they fall to the ground where they stay as very large dead bodies.
So, any points?
So, the mountains you see, they were living before, they are not living anymore.
Yeah, it could be. Could be. Some of them are. Some of them are.
There's a pastime actually in which Indra cut the wings of lots of mountains because they are creating disturbance.
Yeah. So this is a very far out religion. You don't find any of the other religions that have mountains with wings. Get it cut off by thunderbolts from rain gods. Their religion is definitely the most colourful. It's definitely the best of all of them. Prabhupada said, even if Krishna is not God, still it is the best. Because our lifestyle is the best. So even if all this is not true, it's still the best. It just makes it even more interesting.
The stories are very far off, very entertaining. Mountains with wings, like cattle. Okay, so maybe Ayers Rock. You know, Ayers Rock is in the middle of Australia, Uluru. Maybe that was a mountain. It was just sitting out there, like that. So it could be like that. But it definitely says that this happens. Sometimes the flying mountains get their wings cut off and they fall down.
But I think the Govardhan Hill is alive. Because I think he was cursed that he was lose. One must die every day. Every day or every day?
Every day, he says.
One must
He'll sink the size of a mustard seed. That's all. Yeah, Giriraj is different to everyone else. Any other points? When the demon Jambasura saw that his friend Bali had fallen, he appeared before Indra, the enemy, just to serve Bali Maharaj with friendly behavior. The greatly powerful Jambasura, carried by a lion, approached Indra and forcefully struck him on the shoulder with his club. He also struck Indra's elephant. Being beaten by Jambasura's club, Indra's elephant was confused and aggrieved. Thus it touched its knees to the ground and fell unconscious. Thereafter, Martali, Indra's chariot driver, brought Indra's chariot, which was drawn by 1,000 horses. Indra then left his elephant and got onto the chariot. Appreciating Martali's service, Jambasura, the best of the demons, smiled. Nonetheless, he struck Martali in the battle with a trident of blazing fire. Although the pain was extremely severe, Martali tolerated it with great patience. Indra, however, being extremely angry at Jambasura, he struck Jambasura with his thunderbolt and thus severed his head from his body. When Narad Rishi informed Jambasura's friends and relatives that Jambasura had been killed, the three demons named Namuchi, Bala, and Paka arrived on the battlefield in great haste. Rebuking Indra with harsh, cruel words that were piercing to the heart, these demons showered him with arrows, just as torrents of rains wash a great mountain. Quickly handling the situation on the battlefield, the demons, Bala, put all of Indra's 1,000 horses into tribulation by simultaneously piercing them, all with an equal number of arrows. What is that noise? Parker, another demon, attacked both the chariot with all its paraphernalia and the chariot driver, Martali, by fitting 200 arrows to his bow and releasing them all simultaneously. This was indeed a wonderful act on the battlefield. Then Namuchi, another demon, attacked Indra and injured him with 15 very powerful golden feathered arrows, which roared like a cloud full of water. Other demons covered Indra along with his chariot and chariot driver with incessant showers of arrows, just as clouds cover the sun in the rainy season. The demigods, being severely oppressed by their enemies and being unable to see Indra on the battlefield, were very anxious. Having no captain or leader, they began lamenting like traders in a wrecked vessel in the midst of the ocean. Chaitanya Prabhu?
From this statement, it appears that in the upper planetary system, there is shipping and that traders there engage in navigation as their occupational duty. Sometimes, as on this planet, these traders are shipwrecked in the middle of the ocean. It appears that even in the upper planetary system, such calamities occasionally take place. The upper planetary system is the creation of the Lord, is certainly not vacant and or devoid of living entities. From Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that every planet is full of living entities, just as Earth is. There is no reason to accept that on other planetary systems there are no living beings.
What are the points?
There are living beings with different bodies and different times suited for that planet.
Anything else?
Essentially, the material nature rewards influence even the upper planetary system. That's what it's not excluded. Meaning that all the calamities and other issues.
Okay. Any other points?
Okay. Abhrumma bhuvanam loka punaravartana arjuna maam upetya Kaunteya punarjanmana vidyate. From the material world down to the planet, or planet to the lower planetary systems, till the planet of Lord Brahma, misery is always existing. Misery is there. Always misery is there. Only that we cross the go to the spiritual world, there is no misery. Always there is misery and the birth and death thing appear. Till the planet of Brahma, even in the planet of Brahma. So, upper planetary system is definitely having misery. Gajendra itself is an example of upper planetary system is having misery. Yet Gajendra had to fight 1,000 years with the goblin. And it clearly says that there's beautiful mountains of silver, gold, and iron, everything, but there are lions and tigers also. Because of Gajendra, they all were not coming near the smaller animals. So there's always this danger.
In his book, because Sadhu said there is no living being in the moon planet, but he's saying there's living beings all the time.
Yeah, so as Prabhupada is explaining to us, that life is in every place in the universe. None of the planets are uncivilized, none of them are unpopulated. Life is everywhere. And at any time in the material world, the nature of the material energy, material suffering, wherein repeated birth and death take place, Krishna says in the Gita. So therefore, anything can happen at any time. We're not exempt. That is the nature of the material energy. So a karma can take place at any time in any circumstances. So even if we're born in a very opulent situation, but that can all end immediately, very quickly. So that is the nature of the material energy. And it's powerful, it is insurmountable. And when it chooses to strike, you can do nothing about it. So, any points? Then Uchi, another demon, attacked Indra. I already read that one. Sorry. Which one? After Indra released himself in the cage of the network of arrows, appearing with his chariot, flag, horse, rider, and thus by the earth and all directions, he shone like the end. Indra was bright and beautiful in the vision of everyone. When Indra, who was known as Vajradhara, the carrier of the thunderbolt, saw his own soul so oppressed by the enemies on the battlefield, he became very angry. Thus he took up his thunderbolt to kill the enemies. O King Parikshit, King Indra used his thunderbolt to cut off the heads of both Bala and Paka in the presence of all their relatives and followers. In this way, he created a very fearful atmosphere on the battlefield. O King, when Namuchi, another demon, saw the killing of both Bala and Paka, he was full of grief and lamentation. Thus, he angrily made a great attempt to kill Indra. Being angry and roaring like a lion, the demon Namuchi took up a steel spear, which was bound with bells and decorated with ornaments of gold. He loudly cried, "Now you are killed." Thus, coming before Indra to kill him, Namuchi released his weapon. O King, when Indra, the King of Heaven, saw this very powerful spear falling toward the ground like a blazing meteor, he immediately cut it to pieces with his arrows.
Then, being very angry, he struck Namuchi's shoulder with his thunderbolt to cut off Namuchi's head. Although King Indra hurled his thunderbolt at Namuchi with great force, he could not even pierce his skin. It is very wonderful that the famed thunderbolt that had pierced the body of Ritrasura could not even slightly injure the skin of Namuchi's neck. When Indra saw the thunderbolt returned from the enemy, he was very much afraid. He began to wonder whether this had happened because of some miraculous superior power. Indra... then we have a purport.
Nila Gopa, you want to read it?
Indra's thunderbolt is invincible, and therefore, then Indra thought that it had returned without doing any injury to Namuchi. He was threatened very much.
So no matter how powerful you are in the material world, your power is not absolute. So it means that whatever ability we have, it doesn't necessarily mean that it will carry us to success. Only Krishna can be successful all the time. So Indra, even though he was so powerful, but he was not able to defeat this enemy. There's always someone more powerful than us in the material world. No matter how powerful you become, everyone is still subordinate. Only Krishna is supreme. Only he can be Ajita. Ajita means undefeated. Indra thought, formerly, when many mountains flying in the sky with wings would fall to the ground and kill people, I cut their wings with this same thunderbolt. Ritrasura was the essence of the austerities undergone by Twashta, yet the thunderbolt killed him. Indeed, not only he, but also many other stalwart heroes, whose very skin could not be injured even by all kinds of weapons, were killed by the same thunderbolt. But now, although the same thunderbolt has been released against a less important demon, it has been ineffectual. Therefore, although it was as good as a Brahmastra, it has now become useless like an ordinary rod. I shall therefore hold it no longer. Sukadeva Goswami continued, while the morose Indra was lamenting in this way, an ominous, unembodied voice said from the sky, this demon Namuchi is not to be annihilated by anything dry or moist. The voice also said, O Indra, because I have given this demon the benediction, be killed by anything that is dry or moist, you have to think of another way to kill him. Feeling the ominous voice, he buried hands and began to meditate on how to kill the demon. He then saw that foam would be the for it was moist dry. Thus Indra, king of heaven, severed Namuchi's head with a weapon of foam, which was neither dry nor moist. Then all the sages satisfied Indra, the exalted personality, by showering flowers and garlands upon him, almost covering him. Sharada.
Indra killed Namuchi with watery foam. It is neither moist nor dry.
So what are the points? The point is that you have to, if you ever have to fight someone who cannot be killed with a weapon that is dry, moist or dry, use a foam weapon. And Bhagavatam teaches us everything. Vishwavasu and Paravasu, the two chiefs of the Gandharvas, sang in great happiness. The kettle drums of the demigods sounded and the apsaras danced in jubilation. Vayu, Agni, Varuna, and other demigods began killing the demons who opposed them, just as lions kill deer in a forest. O King, when Lord Brahma saw the imminent total annihilation of the demons, he sent a message with Narada, who went before the demigods to make them stop fighting. The great sage Narada said, all of you demigods are protected by the arms of Narayan. the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And by His grace you have gotten the nectar. By the grace of the Goddess of Fortune you are glorious in every way. Therefore, please stop this fighting. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, accepting the words of Narada, the demigods gave up their anger and stopped fighting. Being praised by their followers, they returned to the heavenly planets. Following the order of Narad Muni, whatever demons remained on the battlefield took Bali Maharaj, who was in a precarious condition, to the hill known as Astagiri. There on that hill, Shukracharya brought to life all the dead demoniac soldiers who had not lost their heads, trunks and limbs. He achieved this by his own mantra, known as Sanjeevani. Bali Maharaj was very experienced in universal affairs. When he regained his senses and memory by the grace of Shukracharya, he could understand everything that had happened. Therefore, although he had been defeated, he did not lament. Okay. So, Jamuna, you want to read the purport?
It is significant that Bali Maharaj is here said to be very experienced. Although defeated, he was not at all sorry, for he knew that nothing can take place without the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since he was a devotee, he accepted his defeat without lamentation. As stated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Bhagavad Gita, Tanmaniya Vadikarasthe Mahapalesha Padachana, everyone in Krishna consciousness should execute his duty without regard for victory or defeat. One must execute his duty as ordered by Krishna or his representative, the spiritual master. Ankulyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhaktir Uttama. In first class devotional service, one always abides by the order and will of Krishna.
What are the points?
We have to submit to the will of Lord Krishna in everything, whether victory or defeat, loss or gain.
Anything else?
We should aim to develop pure bhakti. This is one of the things that Krishna is given to us. We should aim for that.
Good. Any other points?
Duty conscious, respective situation.
Good. Any other points?
The life will become so peaceful if we live like that.
Yeah. If you're dependent on Krishna.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, death can overcome all of us at any time. That is the potency of the material energy. Everyone has to bow down to death. So, for a devotee, Prabhupada says there is no death. Because it is just the beginning of future service to Krishna. So a devotee, there is no fear. A devotee is completely surrendered to Krishna, a pure devotee. So we're seeing here the example of Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj is a pure devotee. So he shows no lamentation. Even though he's been defeated by Indra, which is a great embarrassment actually. To lose a fight or to be carried away from the battlefield is, as Krishna says to Arjuna in the second chapter of the Gita, Krishna says that infamy is worse than death for a kshatriya, for a warrior. So for him to be taken away, that is very difficult to live with for a kshatriya. But Bali Maharaj, he does not feel any lamentation. He doesn't feel any pain in his false ego, because he doesn't have a false ego. And he has no fear. Even if he dies on the battlefield, he has no fear. So he's fully surrendered to Krishna under all circumstances.
So then, Prabhupada explains that
none of us attain success in our devotional service without Krishna's benediction. And you see with the demigods, why were they victorious? Because Krishna interceded. Without Krishna's assistance, they could not have won the battle. They were in great difficulty. But then by Krishna's arrangement, then they became successful. So same, we have to learn like that also. If we're successful, that's only because Krishna is ultimately blessing us. So, any further points? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.